From Jefferson Public Radio, I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. Joining me today in the JPR studios is Sean Mullins, whose latest release came out back in 2015 called My Stupid Heart. Information is online at seanmullins.com. Hello.
Hello.
It's nice to see you, and I should say nice to see you again, because we met a year ago at Sisters Folk Festival. I am thrilled that you are here.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. And you're not here alone. Who do you have with you in the studio today?
I have Mr. Radoslav Lorkovich over here. He brought his little squeeze box in. And then we've got Mr. Tom, better known as Panda, Ryan, over here. He plays bass with me, but we're not going to trouble you guys with bass today, but he may sing a little with us.
Fantastic. Well, I want to go back in time a little bit, because in recent years, you and your music have definitely been a part of our public radio, non-com radio, Americana family. But you didn't really start out that way. You'd put out something like 7 or 8 records on your own, and then the doors kind of get blown off by one big, huge pop hit. Looking back at your output from before that time, after that time, and that song, does that song feel like an outlier in everything that you've done? Does it feel weird, that one particular thing that was so much different, at least in terms of popularity?
No, because I think, like you said, there had been, you know, a 9-year, almost 10 years before that, that I was putting out my own records. And, you know, I had a little love from World Cafe, a little love from Mountain Stage. There were little things happening, but nothing really, you know, you're selling a few thousand records a year, basically out of the back of the van and playing little coffee houses and tip rooms and terrible bars, you know, around the South, because they didn't have the right kind of rooms to play, you know.
And so, you were starting around Atlanta, right?
Yeah, I started out of Atlanta and also Dahlonega, Georgia, up in the mountains, which was an interesting, because it was a really rough bar that I kind of came out of up there. So I would go down to Atlanta and you know, sit in with Indigo Girls and people like that, coming, playing the little trackside tavern and cool little venues. But there was a great acoustic scene in Atlanta in the late 80s and early 90s. So I kind of fit right into that. It was mostly women, and I was one of the only guys, and I was in the military at the time, and I didn't know if I would really be welcomed, and I was welcomed with open arms. So it was a good beginning for me, you know, learning about just different people and how we all are the same, really.
Hmm. Well, you've had a family of musicians out on the road with you over the last couple of years. This most recent record, My Stupid Heart, was a collection of people that, going into the recording session, I gather you didn't really know all that well. You had known of them, but you had talked about it being kind of an unknown place to go. Of, you had songs, they were your babies, you were ready to put them down on recording, but yet the people that were going to contribute were somewhat unknown to you.
Right. Well, these guys both contribute, but also there were others. There were Nashville session guys, the A-list kind of cats that you never hear their names, really, but they're on all the records. And not just the hit country and pop records that we're forced to hear, but I'm talking about really great music, you know, some cool stuff that, you know, someone like Tom Bukovac, he's probably, I don't know, top 10 guitar players in the world, I would imagine, and for real, you know, and he plays on all kinds of records, you know, everything you can think of, he can kind of do it. Michael Rhodes on bass guitar, you know, there's no one like Michael Rhodes. He probably has hundreds of gold and platinum records that he's played on for the last 30 or 40 years, you know, of all types of genres of music. So, yeah, this was the class of musician that that Laurie White had chosen for me for this record. She was like, I want to see what you sound like with my guys. She goes, these cats are like, you know, it's different than your band live, but I want to try that, and then we'll have your guys come in and play some on it too, which we did. So it was a nice mix, and it ended up, I love the record, and she's a wonderful, wonderful producer.
It turned out beautifully. So obviously you had some good chemistry with the people that were in the studio for you.
Oh man, it was easy. It was 1 or 2 takes.
That is a credit to all of them.
Yeah.
Sean Mullins is my guest today, live on Jefferson Public Radio. His newest release is called My Stupid Heart, and information is online at seanmullins.com. What do you want to play first for us today?
Why don't we do Ferguson? I think that's a good one to start with. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up, because there has been quite a bit of talk about the song, the contents of the song, the focus of the song. But yet at the same time, there are things that you leave out. So there's some sort of,
absolutely,
you know, arm's length perspective.
It's not really, for me, it's not about being arm's length so much, although I could see where that would be the take on it. It's more of the issue is so volatile, and so there's such a divide, which in my opinion there isn't. There really shouldn't even be a divide. You get past politics and get right down into kind of human rights after, you know, or being rights even.
Sure.
I don't kill ants, man. I don't know. I just don't do it. I don't swap bees or anything, you know. Okay, I'll kill a mosquito once in a while. That's about it, though. But, you know, I kind of live a little bit like that. I don't know why. It's been that way for a long time for me. So the song's really more about, it's a timeline, it's a story. It kind of maybe puts things into perspective for people who aren't thinking along the lines of, you know, where we are right now with the whole, you know, police thing, with, you know, black males, with, because that seems to be a major issue around the country. Some people argue that it's not nearly as big of an issue as black-on-black crime in major cities, which you can't really argue with that. Like, per capita, that's happening much more. And then but of course, you know, you had Chris Rock the other night saying something about bad apples, you know, and how, you know, police forces will talk about, well, there's just a couple of bad apples, you know, and he says, well, you know, thank God that the airlines aren't doing that. Well, you know, there's a couple of pilots that might fly the planes into a mountain, but the rest of them are good guys. So that's something to keep in mind. But Ferguson, instead of really kind of pointing fingers, it just tells a story, the song.
All of ye fallen fathers and mothers, I hear you calling from deep in your graves, songs about Jesus, songs about freedom, shackles and crosses, and the way blood behaves. Sail the great ocean, soul down the river, white fields of cotton, green fields of cane, the sweat from their bodies, the tears of their children, washed in the blood, and the promised land. Mama still crying,
for the dying and dead, and the war rages on, and the whole thing is rotten, and the blood we all bleed is the same shade of red.
That is Ferguson. It's Sean Mullins live today on Jefferson Public Radio. His latest release, put out back in 2015, is called My Stupid Heart. There is new music on the way. We'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes. Information on Sean and his music is available at seanmullins.com. Well, let's talk about My Stupid Heart in depth a little bit. This was a record that, at least in terms of everything that's been written about it, and correct me if this is not true, was generally a collection of songs that addressed your perceived relationship failures. Is that true?
I guess so, yeah.
how many of those are you using for of inspiration?
I've been married 3 times.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I was married really early, right during college we got married, my first wife and I. And then that didn't work out, and I soon thereafter met my second wife, and we were together for a long time, almost 18 years. And we had our child Murphy together, but we were more like friends in the end, and we still are. We're good friends. And then I had a third wife and she passed away last year.
Sorry to hear that.
So it's been a really, weird thing with me in relationships, but I think what the album was really about was me trying to figure all that out and be okay with the fact that I'm going to keep falling in love and trying to make it happen somehow, you know, find the right person for your soul or whatever.
Another thing that I read about the creation of this record, and we had talked just before you played Ferguson about some of the players that ended up on this record, the Nashville A-list, as you called them, was a worry or a concern that because of the people that were in it and involved, that it was going to end up being a sort of slick Nashville record. And one of the terms I came across, which I thought was interesting that I wanted you to talk a little bit about, was the difference between a quality record and a record with sheen.
Right.
What is the difference? How do you create sheen, and does it always equate to lack of quality, or are they
certainly
mutually
not
exclusive?
No, because I mean Steely Dan's full of sheen and it sounds great.
How do you get that?
Well, I'm no engineer really, but I think it has a lot to do with engineering. I think it's the audio engineer that's there and the players that are there and also who's producing the track, because you know, someone like Larry White, who produced My Stupid Heart, you know, is a wonderful musician. She is she graduated top of her class from Miami with engineering as well as vocals. So she's a great singer, too. So her knowing my voice and kind of knowing me, we're good friends, and knowing that after one or two takes that the magic might start to lose. You really want to capture that first thing. We're both very old school in our way of thinking about recording, and because I've experimented, I've done it lots of different ways. I mean, there have been times when I will record 30 tracks of vocals and not be happy yet, and that's because you get too far into it, and there's not someone there going, dude, the third one was the one, you know. You warmed up on the first one, the second one, you cracked your vocal on the second phrase, but that third one, boom. There's no need to do 27 other ones. So that ends up being what you learn over time, is that it's like James Brown said, the first take's from God and the rest is just jive.
Yeah.
So if you can get the right people in the room, you will get a wonderful track, and the slick stuff is going to be kind of, you know, if it's slick sounding, it's something that happened after that. Maybe the mixing engineer got into it, and you know, part of it's recording live too, and not trying to stack things on top of one another, locked to a digital grid, which we don't do. We don't run click tracks even. We're playing live, and if it moves and breathes a little bit like an old record, then that's why, you know, because we're not using the technology that's given to us.
Well, you're close to what, 25 years into making music now? Your voice is still remarkably
30
remarkably 30 good.
Years.
And you know, one of the great qualities of your voice has always been this really resonant low end.
Yeah.
And it seems to be getting better as you get older. And you are definitely using it to your advantage.
Oh, thanks, man. I've always loved baritone singers. You know, I grew up listening to like Lou Rawls and Isaac Hayes and Christofferson and, you know, a lot of the Don Williams, you know, that stuff blows my mind. So,
well, you had a number one hit in 1998 in Top 40. You had a number one album in 2006 in the Americana world. You've had a number one country hit co-write
with Zach Brown. Yeah.
That's not bad. You've kind of come at it from all different angles.
Yeah. It's been fun to kind of branch. I mean, I don't feel like it's really that much of a stretch because Zach and I come from the same state. We really like the same stuff a lot, you know. I don't throw axes into trees as much as he does, but we like a lot of the same stuff, you know. I mean, like we're kind of country boys at heart, you know, and so we grew up together in a way. I mean, I've known him since he was 14, so when we first started playing together, he was still in high school, and he would come and open shows for me, you know. So we knew each other a long time.
Do you write a lot of tunes for other people?
I have. You know, a lot of times what happens is you'll be part of a pool of many writers that are kind of like the last CeeLo Green record I wrote for. But none of the songs got picked. I thought one was definitely going to make it too. It was really good. It was called Hypnotized. And I thought it was perfect for him. But, you know, someone didn't quite, it was either him or the producer or the label. They didn't think it was the right thing.
Right.
So, yeah, you do that. And once in a while, something will take. And I try not to, honestly, I don't want to spend a lot of my time with that. It's a little bit too risky. It's like going to Vegas or something. But your chances might be better in Vegas.
Is it easier for you or harder for you to write a song with someone else in mind?
Oh, I don't know. I thought it was easier. But like I said, I didn't get picked. So to me, it's much harder to you know, especially if you're co-writing with someone, that's a difficult thing. It's almost like you almost have to be as intimate as a lover with someone to be able to write with them, you know, like if you to really get there and be able to reveal whatever needs to happen to make a great song and not just something that's like, yeah, I don't know what they're talking about, but it's a pretty good song.
Yeah.
You know?
So does that mean we might hear some of those in a subsequent Sean Mullins record in the future?
Yeah.
Some of those things that didn't get picked by others, but
maybe.
Yeah. Well, what do you want to play for us next?
How about a song called The Great Unknown?
Well, it's Friday night and I'm back again. With my old guitar and my trusty grin. And the best you don't come in here sign. Tattooed on this heart of mine. From a dirty brown shag carpet stage, I sing my song and I pace the cage. Stuck up here in the twilight zone and staring out into the great unknown. There's an old Hank Williams figurine hanging by a guitar string from the pull chain of the Pabst Blue Ribbon sign with a clock that stopped on 9:30. Yeah, the time ain't changed round here in years. Same sad story, same old tears. Ain't nobody wants to be alone out here in the great unknown. Bar designed to take you nowhere far. They
Got a mirror back behind the whiskey shelves, where we don't dare look back at ourselves. And just past the men's room down the hall, barely hanging there on a plaster wall, a faded sticker on the old payphone that says, "Welcome to the great unknown." Out beyond the yonder star, it's all up in there where you are, by some cosmic wind we're blown out into the great unknown. Hopes and dreams and ash and dust, it all seems to either rot or rust. Souls wrapped up in flesh and bone, heartbeats in the great unknown.
That is The Great Unknown, Sean Mullins, live today here on Jefferson Public Radio. His latest release from 2015 is called My Stupid Heart. Information is at seanmullins.com. You have a musical anniversary coming up this next year.
That's
and
right.
Some grand plans to celebrate. What do you have in the works?
Well, it's called Soul's Core Revival, and it's a 20-year celebration and anniversary project. And a lot of people will put out a remixed or a remastered version when they're doing an anniversary project. And we thought that was great, but we thought, why not do something a little bit bigger and actually redo the whole project kind of in a different way? And it's not going to be like crazy different, but you know, kind of take some liberties with some of the arrangements on the original record. So the same songs. The band I'm playing with now, we're calling Soul Carnival, and includes these guys plus Davis Causey and Randall Bramlett. And if you know who Randall is, just
absolutely
like unbelievable B3 player. And with him and Rad in the band, it's something else. It's a wonderful band. And so we're doing that version of it, as well as a what I'm calling a naked version, which is me and an instrument. So all of the songs on Soul's Core, two different albums. The vinyl will be probably a 3 or 4 album set. You know, it's going to be kind of a pretty big thing.
Cool.
So we're excited about it. And we're going through Pledge Music.
You said something interesting in there. You said you and an instrument. You didn't say you and a guitar. What does that mean?
Well, because I've been, you know, I played some of that stuff on piano in Soul's Core. And I, even though my chops aren't up right now, I should rent a piano or something and kind of get my chops back. But I might do a couple of things on piano, or I might try something else, you know, like didgeridoo and vocals. I don't know how I'm going to do that at the same time, but I'm going to work on it.
Not that long ago, a guy who was sitting in this very seat doing a live session with us was Pete Droege.
Okay, good.
So you are now the second of the three that I have the opportunity to beg on behalf of music fans for a Thorns reunion.
I would love that. I thought the music was so good.
It was so good. And I thanked him for this, and I thank you for this. There was a secondary record that you did with that project that was all acoustic versions of all of the songs
right.
that we used a lot here at JPR.
Yeah, the Sunset Sessions. Yeah.
When we get Matthew Sweet in here, I will also make the ask of him, and then perhaps in the future.
I bet we could do it, especially now. It's a lot easier to record without getting together. That'd be probably the getting three personalities together in the same room sometimes is tough, but I think now it'd be an easy thing to do.
And literally from opposite corners of the United States, right? Pete's up in Washington.
I just ran into Matthew last week.
So, did you?
Yeah, he's doing great.
Fantastic. Well, you said once, I want my career to grow like John Hiatt's or John Prine's. You are 30 years in. You've had number one hit. You've had a number one record in a genre. You have been a co-writer on a number one tune. You have an essential Sean Mullins album out in the marketplace that you can actually buy. How does it feel at this point? What do you have left that you still want to do?
I still would look at those guys and Emmylou and Patty Griffin and Sean Colvin and, there's the list goes on of those masters, but... they're the masters, you know. We're all trying to kind of reach that mark, and musically, artistically speaking. So I don't think about, I mean, I'm not going to say I never think about it, because I'm always broke, so I'm always thinking about money. But I think I try to just concentrate on the music for the most part. And even though we're getting more and more involved with social media, and I've been a dinosaur with that, I'm really getting into it late, but I'm really enjoying the connection with people and the feedback we're getting from the audience, and it's kind of growing every day, so it's fun.
Well, the music that you've been putting out is fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
Really like it. Early on here today, we were talking about that song that really put you on the map back in, 1998, I think it was, something like that. And you talked once about one of the gigs that you had following the incredible popularity of that tune at Madison Square Garden,
mm-hmm.
and you were solo.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like to play a ridiculously large room like that all by yourself? This was probably before in-ear monitors existed, right? So you had to have something coming back to you.
They existed, but I didn't have one. I think they just brought up a wedge for me.
Can you hear a thing in a room that big?
It's hard to remember back on that particular one, but I do recall it going really well. And yeah. I could hear enough, and it was a little satellite stage that, you know, it was a big radio show, so it wasn't just me playing that night. But I had about a 20-minute set in between, like, the Backstreet Boys and, you know, something else really big, maybe Destiny's Child. It was there were really big, you know, pop acts that involved pyrotechnics and dancing and astronaut costumes and stuff, rappelling, and I mean, it was wild, right? So, but they were really using me as a filler, you know. I'd get out on the satellite stage and plunk away at a couple of songs while they're building the next set behind me. But getting to do that song that people, you could, it was a great feeling to have 25,000 people sing along with you while you're just acoustic, you know. I felt like John Denver for a minute.
I bet. Well, you've now had a heck of a lot of life experiences go by. You have put out acoustic records in the interim. No doubt you have probably performed that song thousands and thousands of times. Does it have a different feel and meaning to you now than it did when you were, a 20-something?
No, it's still kind of the same meaning. Cause I still recall journaling the song into the journal. It kind of was started off as a journal entry, like a lot of the songs on Soul's Core. But that one in particular wrote itself and very short amount of time. The lyric, it was, you know, I wasn't worried about trying to make perfect or hard rhymes back then. So, you know, you had Stars and Boulevard, something that now I would never let myself do, for instance.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting in itself, that the looser and more free you are as an artist sometimes is when the magic will happen. And I have to keep that in mind all the time as I grow as a writer, you know?
Yeah. Well, I loved watching you perform it last year at Sisters.
Thanks, man.
Would you be willing to do it for us?
Sure, I'd love to.
She grew up with the children of the stars in the Hollywood Hills and the Boulevard. Her parents threw big parties, you know, everyone was there. They hung out with folks like Dennis Hopper and Bob Seger and Sonny Ann and shit. She feels safe now in this bar on Fairfax. from the stage, I can tell that she can't let go and she can't relax. And just before she hangs her head to cry, I sing to her a lullaby. I say everything's gonna be alright. Rock-a-bye, rock-a-bye. And everything's gonna be alright. Rock-a-bye, rock-a-bye, rock-a-bye. She still lives with her mom outside the city, down that street about a half a mile. And all her friends tell her that she's so pretty. But she'd be a whole lot prettier, you know, if she'd smile once in a while. But you know, even her smile, it looks just like a frown. She's seen her share of devils in this angel town. And everything's gonna be alright. Rock-a-bye, rock-a-bye. And everything's gonna be alright. Rock-a-bye, rock-a-bye. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Yeah. I told her, I said, I ain't sure about this place. It's hard to play a gig in this town and keep a straight face. It seems like everybody's got a plan. It's kind of like Nashville with a tan. Everything's gonna be all right. Rock-a-bye, rock-a-bye. Everything's gonna be alright. Don't you rock-a-bye, rock-a-bye. Everything's gonna be alright. Rock-a-bye, rock-a-bye.
That is fantastic. It's Sean Mullins live today on Jefferson Public Radio with Lullaby. His newest release is called My Stupid Heart. The new record due out sometime in 2018?
July 20th.
Fantastic. I can't wait for
it. The exact 20-year mark.
SeanMullins.com is the place to go to find out about the record. Sean, it's good to see you again. Thanks for coming
by.
Great
to see you, brother. Thanks for having me.